More Idaho Matters right now. Since a mob of extremists breached the U.S. Capitol building yesterday, many words are being used to describe what happened, including sedition, an attempted coup, and an insurrection. And many are calling for President Trump to be removed from office, either through an impeachment or invoking the 25th Amendment. In fact, there is breaking news that Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are calling for his immediate removal by invoking the 25th Amendment. So, what do all of these words mean when it comes to our Constitution? Joining us once again this week is University of Idaho Law Professor Shakira Sanders. Shakira, I love having you on the show, but seriously, did not expect to have you on twice in one week.
Thank you for having me.
Holy cow. Okay, so let's start with insurrection. In fact, Utah Senator Mitt Romney said during his remarks on the Senate floor late last night that, quote, what happened here today was insurrection incited by the President of the United States, unquote. Can you tell us what insurrection is?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if our Constitution defines the term. Although the term insurrection rebellion is used a number of times in the Constitution. And generally where we see it is used as a sort of one of those triggers for the use of extraordinary or emergency powers on behalf of the legislature, or usually the executive branch. But to be clear, our Constitution does not define the term insurrection, nor does it define the term rebellion.
That's really interesting. Okay, so then let's talk about sedition. Now, among those using that word yesterday was President-elect Joe Biden, who said the riot, quote, borders on sedition and it must end now, unquote. So, Shakira, what does sedition mean?
So what we have is a federal statute, and forgive me, I don't have the exact provision in front of me, but there is a federal sedition statute, which prohibits the use of violence or force to overthrow the U.S. government. And that term violence or force is what separates something like sedition from one's normal, ordinary exercise of First Amendment speech.
Then the word coup has been used a lot to describe yesterday's events. I mean, in fact, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo wrote in a statement last night, and here's a quote. He says, "We must call today's violence what it actually is, a failed attempt at a coup." So talk to us about what that means, because we also, Professor Sanders, we hear this a lot about other developing countries when there's been an attempted coup or a coup and a leader was taken out of that position.
So again, I think when we think of these terms, coups, rebellion, insurrection, they probably all fall under the federal statute that prohibits the violent overthrow of the government. And there are probably state statutes that do the same thing under all of the 50 states and the U.S. territories. So here we're all thinking about that same bucket of behavior, which is the use of violence or force or threats of violence or force to somehow effectuate a political outcome. Here, the overturning of the results of the result of the result of the 2020 presidential election.
And to be clear, I found this right now that insurrection or rebellion is actually a crime under Title 18 of the U.S. Code. And if you're found guilty of it, it's punishable with a fine or a maximum 10-year prison sentence, or both, and it makes someone ineligible of holding office in the United States.
Oh, yes. I mean, the consequences are dire. I think another term you can throw in there would be something like treason. To the extent that all of these behaviors are crimes, they likely all come with not just criminal fines and imprisonment, but also the inability to hold public office in the United States.
So before we get into the 25th Amendment, I do want to ask a question regarding this idea of comparing what happened yesterday with the BLM movement after the killing of George Floyd in particular. And we talked about this in the beginning of the program today, the National Guard being called in back in June in Washington, D.C., and to keep these protesters in line, basically. With that said, so many, you know, you've seen it on social media, people saying, you know, this was, you know, this was just like what happened with the Black Lives Matter movement. It's a protest. And, you know, you're just not happy about it if you know, because you don't like the group of individuals who were protesting yesterday. With that said, with the BLM movement, with these other protests that happened, yes, we can go into the weeds of the fact that there was looting. There were criminal activities that happened for the most part. These were peaceful protests. With what happened yesterday, it stopped democracy from moving forward for upwards of 4 to 6 hours.
Right.
That
What's
has to be a difference.
To me is that what we saw yesterday was exactly everything that BLM opponents and critics sort of accuse them of, which is the idea that you want to somehow engage in shenanigans, tomfoolery, violence to overthrow the government or effectuate some type of political change. But let's be clear, this isn't the first time we've seen examples of this type of racial hypocrisy in the United States. One could argue that this is how the United States started itself, mm-hmm. right? We declare indigenous individuals savages and unable or unworthy of being possessors of the land that they were in, right? And we started this entire campaign that these were not humans, at least not humans who were equal to the Europeans who were coming to occupy the land. So for me, there are symbols that look very familiar to what happened yesterday. And of course, if you look at some of the images of the wars from the 1800s, right? The freeing of America in the backdrop of this rebellion, well, it all starts to become a little bit more clear depending on the type of lens that we're using to look at this. And of course, I look at this lens not just as a constitutional law professor and scholar, but as an African-American woman born and raised in the United States.
And I want to talk now, and I want to turn to the 25th Amendment. Multiple sources are reporting that there has been discussion among members of President Trump's cabinet, as well as his allies, on whether or not to invoke the 25th Amendment. In fact, as I mentioned in the beginning of this segment with you, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, as well as Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, held a news conference right during our program calling for the 25th Amendment to be invoked immediately. Nancy Pelosi saying that if it's not, then she will potentially start impeachment proceedings because he is, quote, dangerous. Representative Adam Kinzinger from Illinois is the first Republican to go on record today calling for the 25th Amendment in order to remove Trump from office. So what is the 25th Amendment and how does it work?
So the 25th Amendment was enacted, or I should say proposed, in 1965, just a few years after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. It was ratified in 1967, and it governs presidential disability and succession. So we've got a number of provisions in the 25th Amendment. Some deal with vacancies for the president, some deal with vacancies for the vice president, and when it comes to the president's in particular, we see provisions creating a process where the vice president rises to either become the president or the vice president rises to become an acting president, which means that the current president can come back and reclaim the position.
Okay, so now we know that Elaine Cho resigned as transportation secretary. So can you invoke the 25th Amendment with a permanent cabinet member missing?
Well, that's what's going to be interesting here, right? It's not just the permanent cabinet member missing, but are there more cabinet members who plan to resign? And who are those who would be rising into those positions, even in a temporary capacity? One, I should say that what looks most likely to govern this situation is Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, but it gives a lot of options to the president. So under Section 4, the vice president and these principal officers of the executive department would submit a written declaration to the Senate President Mitch McConnell and the Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, and they would all certify or declare that they believe the president is unable to carry out their duties. Once that happens, the vice president automatically becomes the acting president. But guess what? The president has the option of submitting their own declaration and saying, hey, you know what? Those folks were wrong. I can perform my duty. In that situation, the president does resume their powers unless you get two-thirds votes from both houses of Congress that agree with the VP and the executive department officers. So as we can see here, and I should also mention that given some of the timing embedded in the text of the Fifth Amendment, there is no... so what we are likely looking at here is a situation where Mike Pence can automatically become acting president. Donald Trump would have some options, but the hearing in both houses of Congress, you have 21 days for that. So both of those options could come well past January 20th, which would effectively remove Donald Trump from office immediately.
How likely is it that the 25th Amendment will be invoked?
I have no idea. And here I'm going to fully lean into my law professorship and say it depends. It depends on who the executive department members are, right? And to be clear, the 25th Amendment does not lay out which executive department members we're talking about, right? It uses this very vague term that basically just says principal officers of the executive department. But assuming that those individuals agree, assuming that Vice President Pence agrees, I don't know if either Mitch McConnell or Nancy Pelosi would have any objection to invoking the 25th Amendment, given what we saw yesterday, which appeared to be a pretty clear evidence that the president directed members of the rally to go to the Capitol building to disrupt the certification process.
That is what he said. University of Idaho law professor Shakira Sanders, always good to have you on the program.
Thank you again for having me. Stay healthy and safe, everybody.
You too. More Idaho Matters next.